Kia ora and welcome to Aaron's Podcast, episode 220. Today is Monday, June 14, 2010. What's this I say? Monday? Am I recording on a Monday? Why, yes, I am. I actually am recording on a Monday. I know normally I don't record until Wednesday, and sometimes even later, but I thought if I want to get two episodes in this week, I better record earlier in the week rather than later. So here I am, and since I didn't get a second podcast in last week, I thought I might as well do it on Monday, hey? Today has been a rainy Monday.
Rainy days and Mondays always get me down.
No. Just because it's a rainy Monday in winter doesn't mean I'm depressed. On the contrary, now that I finally have a chance to start getting some things done, I'm actually in a pretty good mood. And I have a few things I'm going to update you on today, tell you about a couple new things, and hint at some things to come. Ooh, that sounds all very mysterious, doesn't it? But first, the update. I told you about a prostitute that had received millions of dollars from a banker who had embezzled the money from the bank. And that is that has now been resolved. Right after I recorded, apparently, the bank and the prostitute reached an out-of-court settlement for, well, I don't know what for, actually, because that's all confidential. I don't know. I presume the bank recovered at least some of its money, maybe not much of it, or maybe, I would guess, not all of it, but I don't know. At any rate, that story is now over. And I suppose all is well that ends well. But what's one of the things I did think was interesting about it is that I haven't really seen anything in the news where people are being all aghast that there's a prostitute involved. There was the allegation that the bankers were only pursuing it because they didn't like the profession of the person who received the money. But I actually don't think that's the case upon reflection. But I haven't heard the average public slagging off about it, about there being a prostitute involved because, of course, prostitution is legal in New Zealand, so that probably has something to do with it. In a kind of a related story, which has just been breaking recently, and you'll see why it's related in a minute, there are several MPs who are in trouble over their spending on ministerial credit cards. Now, members of parliament who are appointed to cabinet get a credit card for expenses related to their official duties, and it's easier than them spending the money and then get reimbursed. It's also a bit tidier for bookkeeping. Unfortunately, some of these MPs used these government credit cards for expenses that were perhaps a bit questionable. Now, the way the media is carrying on about this, you would think that they spent tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars in things, but in some cases we're talking about maybe a couple hundred. One minister, spent $370 on a restaurant meal for his electorate staff. Now, it's entirely possible that he wasn't allowed to do that on his ministerial credit card, but I would have thought that that would have been a permissible expense for an MP coming out of his MP's budget. But I think the issue is that he used his ministerial card for that. And there have been similar things for that, and some have claimed that, well, two national MPs, including the Prime Minister, claimed that the cards were stolen. Okay. But in this story, there are two MPs in particular who have stood out. One is a guy named Shane Jones, who had been tipped to take over the leadership of the Labour Party. And he fronted up to the media last week admitting, and I put that in quote marks, that he had used the government credit card to rent porn in hotels when he was traveling on official business. And he was going on about how he'd done this, and how he was caught, and he was embarrassed, and it was embarrassing for him and his family, and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? Something's not right about that story. First of all, hotels, now this I'm told, I don't know this from personal experience, I must add, hotels don't itemize porn on the bills. They'll say in-room movie or something like that, but they don't say, you know, I'm not even going to hazard a guess at the title of some of these movies. But although the one suggestion I saw was something about the honorable member rises, which made me giggle, obviously. since hotels don't itemize porn movies on the bills, there is actually no way to know that he did, in fact, rent porn movies. So I'm thinking that he actually admitted that as a sort of preemptive thing to distract attention from the bad things that he spent money on. There was apparently an incident in which he couldn't couldn't be bothered waiting for a commercial air flight to take him to where he had to go. So he chartered a plane instead for some like $2,500 or something like that. I don't remember how much it was, which is wasted because he could have waited for the commercial flight and he chose not to. And a few other expenses here and there that were apparently not appropriate. And so he's in big trouble and he's been demoted. He's taken off the front bench. The front bench are the senior MPs in a government position. They're the senior cabinet members in the opposition. They would be the people who would make up the senior cabinet after a change of government. So these are senior MPs. Well, he's been demoted to the back bench. The other MP is named Chris Carter, who was the foreign affairs spokesman. He attended, although this is when they were still in government, he attended Gerald Ford's funeral on behalf of New Zealand, which I mentioned at the time. He is openly gay. He is New Zealand's first gay MP, openly gay MP. He came out after he was elected to his first term in his maiden speech to Parliament. Every new MP makes a speech. Their first speech to Parliament is called the maiden speech. And he alleges that he is being singled out for extra scrutiny because he's gay. And it is very easy for those of us who don't know him or all of the situation to say, oh, yeah, come on now, that's probably not the case. Except I think it kind of is. Now, I admit again, I don't know all of the details. I'm not there. I don't know him. I don't know his partner. But some of the scrutiny seems a little bit unduly intense. For instance, one of the things he's been criticized for is spending something like $240 on flowers for his partner over the, I guess, over a couple of years or something. I'm not really sure. And he has since reimbursed the government for the cost of that. Now, I'm sorry, but I'm just not upset that he has spent money on flowers for his partner, because if he was heterosexual and married to a woman, I just don't think the media would be making such a big deal out of it. I'm sorry, I just don't. I don't have a problem with MPs, or especially ministers who travel even more than ordinary MPs. I don't have a problem with them buying flowers for their partner on the government check, because the partners of these government ministers really suffer a lot. They don't see their partner all that much. They they have to do without them for extended periods of time. They could be in the public light, public limelight. Whenever, especially if something goes wrong and the media is paying scrutiny, putting scrutiny on the minister, then their partner may also come in for scrutiny. So I think that one is a bit unfair, and I do think he's being singled out for that one, that particular expense. Now, some of the others, I don't know. He and others are being criticized for having spent money on massages when they were traveling. Well, having flown long distance, I can see why one might want a massage. Whether or not it was justified or not, I don't know, because I don't know the details. I don't know. It's just a lot of these expenses are a whole lot of bluff and bluster over what is really trivial stuff. And as far as I know, it was all paid back before the amounts were released. So clearly, at some stage along the line, they realized that they probably shouldn't have put those expenses on the government card. They reimbursed the government for those expenses, and that should have been the end of the story. But instead, they're being punished for these things that they've done. And I frankly don't think they should be. And that's for both parties. However, what does annoy me is that these three Labour MPs have been demoted. The third one I don't actually know or know anything about, so I won't even go into that one. But one of the national government's high flyers is a guy named Tim Grosser, who used to be New Zealand's trade representative or negotiator, whatever the hell the title is. And he did a very similar thing, charging apparently a lot of wine to his government credit card. And he's not being demoted. And I just don't think that's right. I think it's a double standard here. I think that Labour is being held to a harsher standard because they're out of government than the National Party is, who are in government, and I don't think that's right. But the other thing is, and one of the reasons why Shane Jones is being criticized is because of the porn movies. If that was a diversionary tactic, it worked. People are really having a go at him over having rented porn, and quite frankly, I couldn't care less. If he's traveling, he was traveling extensively on government business when Labour was in government, and if he wants to rent the odd porn movie, well, apparently it was 40 porn movies over the time he had the card, that's his business. It's none of my business. And if he reimbursed the government, as he apparently did, well, what business is it of mine? Now, they're saying, well, it's inappropriate to use a government card to rent porn. Well, I think they're being a bit precious about the type of movies these supposedly are. He called them blue movies. Now, I don't know what countries these rentals happened in, but I suspect that at least in some places, those so-called porn movies were probably barely R-rated. So, I mean, I think we're getting a little bit worked up over something that's not very important. And Shane Jones deserves to be criticized over some of the other things he spent money on and his judgment in doing so more than the movies. Because to my mind, if a government minister is traveling alone, I don't really care that much whether they're renting porn or Bambi or whatever the movie might be. I think they're entitled to it because they're away from home. They are suffering as well. They're sacrificing for the on behalf of the people. Oh, come on. If they want to rent a bloody movie, let them rent the bloody movie and get over it. I'm clearly just not feeling the outrage on this whole topic. And I really don't understand why some people are. But be that as it may. Now, I haven't talked about this before, mostly because I didn't really have anything to say. But there is a hit New Zealand show that is coming to American television. Well, I should say it's being remade for American television. The New Zealand program is called Outrageous Fortune. And it centers on the lives of a woman, working class, basically, woman and her family, who are, it's a criminal family, and they're trying to, you know, get out of crime. The husband's just been sent off to prison. There are twin sons. There's a daughter who wants to be famous. Somebody's father, I've forgotten if it's the husband or the wife, lives with them. This is all in the American version. Now, the American version is called Scoundrels, and it's on ABC. The first 8 episodes begin airing on Sunday, I think it is. I don't know if that's Sunday. It must be a Sunday our time, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, Scoundrels is based entirely on Outrageous Fortune. The characters, I believe the writers are the same as well. However, it's being made in the U.S., I believe. It looks to me like it's just the concept has been sold to Americans. But a lot of New Zealand fans of the program are really upset about it. Not that it's being remade, but they feel that the essence of the program is being changed too much. And I can't really say because I have only seen probably 2 or 3 episodes of Outrageous Fortune. And that is all right. That's not my thing. But it was okay. The guy who's the son is sort of cute. he plays twins. One is a bit dim, and the other is a lawyer. And I don't know what they are in America. But some of the Kiwi fans are upset that the names of the characters, some of the names have been changed. Well, one of the characters' names was Jethro, and the argument was that if they left that name in, people would think of the Beverly Hillbillies. I don't know about that. And they said that the house is too nice, and the prison where the husband and father is too nice. Well, whatever. From people I know who've at least seen the trailer, Kiwis I'm talking about, they don't look at it quite the same way. They think, oh, it's not that bad, and it's appropriate for an American context. Because you can't take a program and then dump it wholesale into a different culture. The same thing happened when British programs were remade in the U.S., All in the Family, Sanford and Son, Three's Company. That's all I can think of off the top of my head. But they were all originally British shows that were remade for the American market, and they changed significant bits and pieces of it. Very often the characters' names, sometimes it was just aspects of it. But the point is that they took a program that was made for a different culture and then Americanized it for an American audience. And I don't frankly see anything wrong with that. Sometimes they don't do it as well as the original. Very often they don't do it as well. But sometimes, you know, it's a good program in its own right. Queer as Folk is a good example of that. The American Queer as Folk was completely different from the English Queer as Folk. It was related quite substantially. I mean, the original series was based really closely on the British series with certain dramatic differences. Like, for instance, Ted dies in the first episode or two of the British series, whereas he obviously lives to the end in the American series. But they are both good series, but for different audiences, different cultures, different reasons. And I don't think that you can always say that an American remake is automatically bad. So I don't know if Outrageous Fortune, when it reappears as Scoundrels, is going to be good or bad. And I'm probably not the best person to judge that because I'm not a fan of Outrageous Fortune. But nevertheless, I thought I would pass that on because that is essentially a New Zealand program that is being remade for American television. And I would really be quite curious to hear what Americans think about Scoundrels and if it's any good or not. It's, as I say, it's not really my cup of tea, so I'm not the best person to, I don't know, pass judgment or whatever. But be that as it may. Now, I am going to go over to comments. And before I do, I am going to play a promo that was recorded for the Amerinds podcast.
Hi, this is Guru Nudy in Tampa. When I want to hear the classiest damn pipes in the podcast industry, I tune into Amerinds podcast live on pride48.com. He's from New Zealand and future approved.
Well, thank you for that, Guru Nudy. I thought that was really nice, and so I wanted to play it here, because I know that many people don't listen to Pride 48. That's an example of the sort of thing I was talking about how you can use Audioboo to record promos for Pride 48. And audioboo.fm is the site, and it's free, and you can record up to 5 minutes of audio. Or you can upload an audio file you've recorded on your own, whatever you want. You can record it over the internet, whatever. You can also use an iPhone or I think an Android to record on the go. Now, I don't have such a phone, so I can't actually do that. But I just record like I normally would a podcast and then upload it. And you're more than welcome to listen to mine, obviously, which is audioboo.fm, I believe, /Amerinds. And if you want to record your own promo, it can be as simple as something like, hi, this is so-and-so, and you're listening to Pride 48. And that's really all it needs to be. And you can upload it to Audioboo and tag it Pride 48, which is one word, Pride 48, and 48 is a number. And then we'll get it. And if you want, you can subscribe to that and listen to everybody else's Audioboos that are tagged there, because they're not all promos. You know, like all the ones that I do, I tag Pride 48, even though they're not all, none of them have been promos. And it's just a way for people to have one central thing to subscribe to so they can get all of these different boos. And it's, I'm really enjoying it. I get maybe, I don't know, 15, well, probably 10 to 15 a day. And they're all really short. Most of them around a minute or less, so some a bit longer. Altogether, it's probably 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes a day of all these different people, and they're like really tiny, short podcasts, and I'm really enjoying it, and you may too. But if you want to see for yourself, just go to audioboo.fm/pride48, one word with the number 48, and listen to what's there and see for yourself if you can even be bothered subscribing on iTunes or however you subscribe to such things. But it's worth checking out, I think. But now I'm going to go over to the written comments. And first up is Montpoisant, who says, unless you're a dangling ornament, you are not a pendant. However, being fussy about precise speaking, you might well be a pedant like me. Thank you, Montpoisant. And for some reason, that is obviously a word I just cannot say, and I don't know why. I'm going to be doing a boo about this later this week, not that specifically, but related to language. I've always had trouble with that word. I always say pendant, even though I don't write that. I spell it correctly when I write it. But for some reason, I always say pendant, and I don't know why, because I don't say pedantic, for instance. I don't know. It's really weird. It's just one of those things. And I am pedantic in some ways about some words and some phrases. And one of them is probably one of just came up today on Twitter. Somebody wrote, I could care less about blah, 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 blah. And Auntie Vera Charles, another podcaster, tweeted back, you couldn't care less. And I remember for years, I was in high school probably, saying to people, oh, that means you, people would say to me, I could care less about that. And I would say to them, oh, so that means you do care. And they'd look at me puzzled, like, what? So, I mean, what I usually say is I couldn't possibly care less, to emphasize it, which is unnecessary, really. But it's the sort of thing I always used to do in high school in particular, and I must have been a real jerk looking back at it, because I was always doing that sort of thing about people's language. If they said really stupid things, well, to me, they seemed really stupid. And yet they're the common mistakes that, well, they're the most obvious, I suppose. But I was always doing stuff like that. So while I was being pedantic, I probably was, in some senses of the word, a pedant, but not necessarily a nice one. The next comment was from Roger Green, who said, "I, on the other hand, am never pedantic," because, of course, librarians don't have any sort of reputation for being pedantic at all. That, you know, everybody knows that. He goes on, "Reckon that the thing that bugs me about the cutback of postal service in the U.S. and in New Zealand is the talk that everybody uses email, pays their bills online, etc., etc. Well, no, they don't. And the ones that don't, by and large, tend to be in a lower socioeconomic class. I understand the economies of scale may no longer exist for regular postal service, but it does make me sad, and it's not just romanticism." Thank you, Roger, and I completely agree with you. It is true that that a lot of things are moving toward the electronic side of things, with not just email, but bill paying and invoicing and so on. But there is still a large segment of society that relies on the postal service. Elderly people, for instance, very often will send birthday gifts to the grandchildren through the mail, very often a card with money in it, which is forbidden in both countries, but they do it anyway. And poor people do, as Roger says, tend to get and receive their bills by mail. They often mail a check in to pay for it still. And they don't have access to a computer, at least not regular access, because they can go to the public library. But I mean, come on, who'd want to use a public library computer to pay their bills or go to the bank? I mean, I wouldn't trust them. So it seems to me that there's going to come a point, a transition point, where the vast majority of people who are at least upper, lower class and above won't need the mail anymore, the postal service anymore, but those who are below will, and older people still will. And at that point, then the question of whether or not the postal service is profitable is irrelevant. At that point, the government has to step in and fund it as a public good, because it's still needed. And then someday, when it turns out that everybody is interconnected through the matrix or whatever, then maybe it won't be necessary. But I frankly don't see the need for a postal service in most Western countries going away anytime, probably for the next 25 years. Unless there are rapid advances in cheap computing, and that's possible, I think it's going to take at least a quarter of a century for the complete need for postal services to disappear. And for precisely the reasons that Roger was talking about. And next up is Tim Carmel, who said, "Keep those cockles warm now that it's getting cold down in the New Zealand. I've been switching over to online payments for several bills, but I continue to wonder about the security of the companies I give my payment information to. The stories I hear from people dealing with identity theft at work makes me think sometimes old-fashioned checks aren't so bad. I'm kind of in the middle about it. A simple Google search will reveal all kinds of news stories about breaches of customers' information from corporations. And here we sit with the worst ecologic disaster happening in the U.S. Gulf by a company whose disaster plan appears to be the big joke. Can I really trust corporations with my personal banking information? I'm beginning to wonder." Thank you, Tim. And of course, Tim is the host of the podcast, which has been renamed The Tim Carmel Show. Although I need to change my blog rules, I just realized. I haven't done that yet, Tim. I'll do that soon. Been a bit busy. But the stuff that Tim's talking about being reluctant about paying bills online and so on, is something I've heard quite a lot from folks in America. Not so much here, where people typically do pay electronically. Again, except for the older people and poorer people. But people in the middle and upper classes tend to pay things electronically, either through a direct debit, where the billing company deducts the information automatically, the payment automatically, or through an electronic transfer that you do yourself through your bank website. And we're a mixture of both. Most of our bills are done by direct debit. The power, the gas, rates, which are property taxes, What else? Insurance, all of the insurance, home contents, cars, life, all those are deducted automatically. The pay television, which is actually one of the highest bills we pay, believe it or not, next to power. I think it goes mortgage, power, pay TV, in that order. Mortgage, obviously, is direct debited. All of that stuff, and we don't have any I don't know, control over that, I suppose. The credit cards I pay manually because I pay more than the minimum payment, obviously. And it's just a question of how much in any given month I want to pay extra. And sometimes I want to make an extra payment during the month. And so I pay all of those manually. And then there's certain other ones here and there that I pay manually. But by and large, most of our bills are direct debited. And all of our pay is direct credited. We don't get checks. In fact, I don't know of any company that issues paychecks in New Zealand. There may still be some somewhere. But I have never seen a paycheck in New Zealand. People get a pay slip that tells them the particulars about how much they got for how many hours, how many annual leave hours they've got, how many sick hours, how much has been paid in tax and all that sort of stuff. So they know what they're getting, but they don't get an actual check or cash. It used to be, apparently not all that long ago, although, well, when I say not all that long, maybe 30 years, people used to get a little envelope with cash every week, once upon a time. And I worked with people who used to talk about getting these envelopes of cash every week. And that I've certainly never seen that. That doesn't exist anymore. But I also, as I said, don't know of any companies that pay in checks. Everybody pays is paid electronically. And actually, just in the news today from ABC World News, I heard that the Obama administration has ordered that in the future all Social Security payments will be made by electronic funds transfer and not through checks. And it's going to save millions of dollars a year not issuing checks. Because it's not just the postage, obviously. It's also the envelope. And it's also the computer processing time and running the checks and all that. And the costs, then, of course, postage on top of that and all that. So it's there are a lot of savings to be made from that. Now, I know that there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be really uneasy about that, at the very least, for some of the reasons that Tim was talking about the payment being direct credited to their bank. But I think it's a good thing. Once you get used to it, the only hesitation I have in just, you know, giving a blanket, hey, go for it, is that the U.S. used to do things differently. When I tried online banking 15 years ago or so in Chicago. And at that time, if you paid a bill electronically, they mailed a check to the person you were paying, and it took 5 days, although they deducted the money from your account immediately. And I thought, well, what's the point of that? I'll send them a check and have the money in my account for 5 days. Same thing. And if money was deposited, it took several days to show up as available. Well, that's not the case here. If you transfer money to another account, it's generally available the next day, the next business day. So if you pay it on a Friday, it doesn't show up until Monday. And with certain exceptions, like if somebody, a private person, is transferring money to you, some banks will only give you the first $200 for a few days until they make sure that it's not going to be reversed. But if you pay a bill, it's paid instantly. The money's deducted from your account instantly. In the next business day, it's in the other's account, but it shows up as the same day that you pay it. So for date payments, if something's due on the 15th, you pay it on the 15th, it actually won't show up in their account until the 16th, but it'll be dated the 15th, if that makes sense. So you're on time. And same thing with paychecks. When paychecks are deposited from a company, from a payroll account, it's instantly available. There's no holds or anything like that. So I think it's a really good thing, and I think it's certainly the wave of the future, and one day there won't be any more paychecks for anybody, and there won't be a need for the mail. But that day is not today. That's it for today, everybody. I will be back once more at least this week. I don't know which day yet, but later this week I will be back with another episode. But in the meantime, you can check out what's going on at pride48.com. You can leave an audio boo for us. That would be lovely. And, of course, you can leave a comment for me in the usual ways that I'll talk about at the end, you know, in the recording at the end. But that's it for today. I'll talk to you again later this week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.